Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostel, at J Frostel on Twitter. Creative South is coming up in just under 2 months, and tickets are going really fast. So if you're listening to this episode the day that it goes up, there's only about 200 tickets left. So if you haven't picked up your tickets yet, or you need to sign up for a workshop, head over to creativesouthga.com and register today before they're all gone. I want to say thank you to everybody who's been listening so far. I'm really amazed at the response. We're three episodes in, and you've already pushed us up onto the iTunes new and noteworthy podcast list, which is just awesome. So thank you. If you haven't already done so, please, when you go to iTunes, rate us and leave us a review. It helps us grow the podcast. More people see it, more people listen, and we're able to talk to cooler guests. Real quickly, I want to tell you that we're going to start releasing the podcast on Tuesdays, starting with the next episode. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode when we make the switch. My guest this week is Fraser Davidson. Fraser is a London-based animator and designer. He runs Cub Studios and Field Theory, which is his sports branding company. He's worked with the likes of Tim Minchin, Bill Maher, Facebook, Nike, and ESPN. In this episode, we'll talk to him about how he collaborates with his clients and other designers, getting death threats for projects he's worked on, Z versus Zed, and sports branding right after this. Old South Supply Company captures the slower pace of the Southern lifestyle. Each product we offer has a purpose and a story that ties back to a memory, not just of our owners, but even you, our customers. From enjoying summers on the lake, or being barefoot in the grass eating watermelon, to kicking back on your front porch sipping sweet tea and lemonade, our products represent core traditions of the South that we can all appreciate. Friendships, family, and hospitality. You see, being Southern has nothing to do with your location, age, race, or gender. It's a matter of the heart, pulling you back into a simpler lifestyle. So slow down a little, and look and feel great doing it with Old South Supply Company. Visit oldsouthsupply.co and use code GETSOUTHERN for 10% off your next order. Today on the Creative South Podcast, we have Fraser Davidson. Welcome, Fraser, and thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess let's just dive into it. I think as everyone can hear, you're not from the States, so why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and where you're from? And
I live in London in England, where I am an animator. I've run a small animation studio called Cub with Ben, and there's four of us here at the moment. We work out of an office in Old Street, and we've been doing this. I've been an animator for I think 11 years now, and I've been running Cub for I think this is our second year. Just about a second year. Before that, I was a freelance animator, and prior to that, I worked for a company called Mainframe doing motion graphics.
Gotcha. So, did you, growing up, were you a kind of artsy kid? I ask this because I know you're a huge fan of sport. So, you know, were you more of the jockey kid or more of an arty kid?
I guess kind of both in a way. Like I did play a lot of sport as a kid, and that was always sort of a huge interest. But I think sort of, you know, from even before I was kind of into that, I was into drawing and painting as a kid. So I guess the kind of two have gone hand in hand, really, in terms of, you know, what I spent my time doing as a child. And then, you know, the older you get, the more broken down your bones get, the less sport you play, and you try and find ways to sort of satiate that.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I just turned 40. So did you go to school for graphic design or something like that? Or
yes, over here I don't know how it quite correlates to what you guys do, but we sort of do a sort of basic set of 11, 12 subjects up until the age of 16. We then sort of, we specialize quite early here. So you choose, they're called A-levels, from 16 to 18. And I chose, you only do sort of three or four of those. So I did maths, physics, and art. And then from there, you go on to university, and we, you know, again, sort of specialize quite a lot more than my understanding of the way it works in the US. And so from there, I went and did a three-year course in graphic design.
Gotcha.
Where I kind of self-taught After Effects animation.
Okay. So you, when you, when you were in college, you, you more focused on the animation side of it than the just strict graphic design, where it's more print design, branding based.
Well, it started off very much kind of hand printing stuff in the first year, and in the second year we were kind of given a selection of about five or six kind of different, what at the time was sort of considered new media, you know, web. You could learn Flash, that kind of thing. I was going to do web, but it was full up. And so the next thing I saw was like motion graphics, so learning After Effects. And so I did that instead. And there was nobody really there to kind of teach After Effects. There was sort of one tutor who had enough sort of basic information to, you know, had enough sort of
enough to get himself into trouble, but not enough to get him out.
I guess. I mean, like, it was extremely rudimentary. So, you know, by the second lesson, you know, we were pretty much teaching him. So,
from I had a teacher like that in college.
Yeah. He's there's a few of those. well intentioned, but kind of, you know, it's very difficult if you're outside the industry to kind of pick up. Pick up kind of technology, you know, the programs and the software, and, you know, actually do anything kind of useful with it if you don't have a sort of a real sort of pressing need to do so, I think.
Yeah, I think it's that way with a lot of things. It's, I mean, I know for me, you know, I went to college for graphic design, and, you know, while I learned a lot while I was in school, I think I learned more my first 2 weeks out of college than I did the entire 4 years in school.
Yeah.
Or for me, 7 years in school.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that real world experience is helpful, because you're, when you're in college, you're in a very controlled environment, and you're more relying on yourself to direct things than other people can do it.
Yeah, definitely.
So you get out of college and you start working with, you said Mainframe was the company you worked for?
Yep. They're still going. They're a company kind of that they, at the time, they, you know, this is prior to YouTube and any real significant online animation. So it was mostly kind of producing promos, donuts, and, you know, sort of brand package branding for the likes of MTV and the BBC and kind of terrestrial channels over here. They've sort of, since then, they've kind of become more, you know, they sort of gradually work towards working in advertising and, you know, more sort of visual effects stuff. And that wasn't really kind of the direction I was looking to go in. So after sort of, I think I was like 6 years, I kind of decided to, you know, get back to kind of doing the more, I guess, kind of character based and sort of, you know, more graphic kind of work. And that's sort of where I started anyway.
So you branched out at that point, got into freelancing and started doing that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I know a lot of people stateside know you for some of the more sports based videos, like the football one that just escaped my
Guide to American Football. Yeah.
Yes, the Guide to American Football.
Yeah.
It's early still for me, so I'm still trying to remember things. But, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, because you and I have kind of struck up a little Twitter friendship, is you pointed out to me that I didn't realize, and I had seen it before, but I didn't realize it was you, was
the Tim Minchin stuff.
Yeah.
So how did you, I guess, stumble into that?
I saw him kind of before he was famous with a friend of mine. It was kind of all the guys from the Flight of the Conchords were doing this set at the 100 Club in London, which is kind of famous comedy venue underground on Oxford Street. We went, sort of saw Todd Barry and people like that, but there was this sort of Australian guy who was just, amazing, like played the piano, sang, and like did these, incredibly funny, very, very clever, musical pieces. And I sort of followed him for a while and kind of saw a few bits and pieces. And then I saw him do this piece called Storm, which is about, it's sort of, it's quintessentially distills sort of everything I believe about the world into one 9-minute beat poem. And I was like, oh my God, I have to do this. I have to animate this piece. And I wrote to him and he said, you're too late. Somebody else is already doing it. So I kind of, I got into talking with those guys and sort of, they had very little animation experience. So it was kind of the case that I was going to kind of help them do that. And unfortunately, because the process was so long, I didn't really get a chance to, complete the project. But I had, a couple of minutes of it are mine, and, I helped kind of write some of the scenes and produce another couple of pieces with Tim off the back of it. So that was how I kind of got into doing those sorts of things.
Gotcha. Is he one of those people who's very collaborative when you work with him, or is he kind of, hey, this is what I got, let me see what you got, and y'all meet somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was kind of interesting because, he was entirely like, I don't have this isn't my area of expertise, so, what do you want to do? What are you thinking? I didn't actually direct Storm. A guy called Dan Turner directed it, so he was kind of more involved on that sort of side of things. But it was really quite the work that I did just with Tim on my own was very, very simple. It was just kind of pitch a silly idea, and he was quite trusting in that way. We produced a song called Pope Song, which depending on what you feel about profanity, may or may not worth be looking up. But it was just a kind of very silly little like song about the Catholic cover up of systemic child abuse, but in a sort of jaunty little sort of rhyme, set of rhyming couplets, and I animated that, and it sort of got, it's had several million views now, and
I probably account to at least a million of them.
And several death threats, and
lucky you.
So that sort of got me a certain notoriety, I think, amongst
death threats aren't exactly one of those things that they cover when you're going to school for things.
No, they don't tell you how to respond. There isn't a word template, Clippy doesn't come up and say, it looks like you're responding to online threats against your person.
I think that's one of those that would just be very much going, but I didn't write the song, I just made the pictures.
Exactly.
I just made the guys dance.
I try not to get
I wouldn't
too
engage
involved.
If someone's threatening to kill you, I wouldn't really engage either. True.
You're probably not going to talk them out of it, so
no we might talk them more into it.
True.
So moving on, you've also done work with Bill Maher, who I would imagine stateside more people know who Bill Maher are than Tim Minchin. But that's an interesting one because I think Bill Maher over here is a bit controversial sometimes. Mm-hmm. He tries to push boundaries sometimes, and sometimes it works and sometimes he doesn't. Mm-hmm. But I think one of those things that you did with that video is take the bite out of what he was saying, if that makes sense.
Maybe. I mean, I think the sort of point still stands about...
Oh, I think the point still stands, but a lot of times, I think for me, the way he conveys things, it's... he's trying so hard to make the point that he loses the humor in it, and I think with that video, you brought the humor back into it.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of... I actually cut out quite a bit of the... the piece is called Irritable Bowel Syndrome, and it's about the sort of the contrasting the relative financial structures of Major League Baseball and the National Football League, and how the National Football League does much better because it's a sort of fairer playing field, and it's about the sort of the socialist idea behind that, and why, you know, there is a sort of a great history of socialism in American sports. and it's
which is very ironic considering the political field right now.
It is, and it's interesting because like we don't really have a kind of great history of that over here. You know, we're very much like the baseball model where, you know, there are a number of, you know, if you take you take soccer for instance, you know, you have four teams maybe who could win the premiership, and they're all owned by oligarchs, or, you know, have been good for decades, and sort of, you know, sort of self-fulfilling prophecy in that they get rich because they're good, they're good because they're rich, and you know,
like the Yankees.
Yeah, and you know, I guess Mars' sort of point is like, well, wouldn't it be nice if the Pittsburgh Pirates won once in a while, as the Steelers do, you know? And I think I kind of actually cut out quite a bit of the sort of glib asides where he sort of talks about, you know, when referencing the Super Bowl, he talks about Janet Jackson's nipples and things like that. And I just thought, well, it doesn't really sort of, you know, add to the narrative. And when somebody sort of mentions that, there's only one thing you can really show on screen. And, you know, so I took out a lot of his gags, and I sort of, it sort of plays a bit straighter now, and I don't think it sort of loses, I think it actually does lose some of the humor, but I mean, I think maybe just the sort of the fact that you're not staring at Bill Maher makes it less irritating, but
no comment.
Yeah depending on your political view, I don't know.
I will be the first to admit I lean left, but he is not my cup of tea.
Yeah,
for the most part. I mean, I find moments of humor in him, but overall, he's not my favorite. But I did like that video a lot. And I had seen him do something similar, which is probably more closer to the full-length version that you had seen. I don't know, it was a few years ago. I don't remember where I saw it, but I had seen him kind of do that. And then when I saw the video that you put out, I was like, oh yeah, this actually works a little better for me.
Yeah, well, it did originally come from one of his kind of, I think, new rules. So it actually came from a book of original. You can see the original piece live. And the only reason it was kind of a good enough audio quality is because he sort of compiles them and creates these audio books just full of rehashed material. So I managed to, that's where I kind of stole the audio from, and they were very sweet. And because I put an ad to his book that I stole it from at the beginning and end of the piece, they didn't sue me or anything, and the producers wrote me a nice letter saying that they would continue to not sue me, which is good.
Yeah, that's always nice to have that disclaimer. So when you're working on these pieces, you know, as a director versus as an animator, how does that work for you? Because, I mean, I would imagine, you know, with, like, graphic design and, I guess, animation in particular, which I don't have a lot of experience in, but I know a little bit about it, is you got to be very detail-oriented. But when you get to the directing part of it, it's got to be very big picture. How are you kind of combining those two?
I mean, if I'm working on a personal project like that for myself, I tend to do it in quite a different way to how I would present work to a client. You know, if you work for a client, the sort of standard methodology we use is that we would, you know, take the scripts, we would break it down into line by line, and we would write annotated notes for exactly what's going to happen for each line. We then create, you know, style frames for each line so that there's no ambiguity as to, you know, what the client's going to see
throughout the piece. Like everything's accounted for, so that there are no surprises when we get to the animation. And kind of the problem with that sort of way of working is that what it tends to do from a creative point of view is sort of, you know, you're in a corner by the time you actually come to animating it. You find that it's quite a sort of yeoman-like process. You know, all the creative decisions have already been made. So it can make animation kind of a little bit tedious, and you're just kind of trying to get through it because, you know, keyframe twitching is... Right. Can be quite dry at times, depending on what it is you're making. So when I produce something like that for myself, the way I tend to work is I'll start in the middle and kind of, you know, pick a scene that really appeals to me, and I'll sort of from scratch kind of design, illustrate and animate it in a day, and kind of hope the rest of it, I'll have a kind of basic idea in my head, but I won't create a bunch of visuals for it at any point until I'm kind of
so you've worked out the beats.
Yeah, and well, I'll normally kind of like create it bit at a time to a finished level. But you know, with something, for instance, like the Guide to American Football, I actually created the sort of the explanation of the league first. So because to me that was kind of the part that was explaining the game itself was fairly straightforward, but it's the sort of idiosyncrasies and you know, historical remnants of the league structure itself that kind of makes the NFL very, very different to the sports that we're used to as a European audience. So if I could kind of explain that, then actually sort of explaining how the game works was relatively simple. Although the animation for that's much, much more complex. And that's kind of actually animating all the players is where it becomes extremely tedious. You know, if you're animating lineman number 8, you know, for the offensive team, it's just, I mean, they all do the same thing. He's the same as lineman number 5 and 6. But, you know, it's that's the bit where it actually, I start to lose interest with these kinds of projects.
So when it gets down to the nuts and bolts, you're wanting to move on to the next thing.
Yeah. I like to, the longer you can, you know, leave creative decisions to be made within something that you're working on, the longer you kind of maintain interest, I think.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, moving on, you know, with the Guide to American Football and some of the other stuff, that leads me into the field theory stuff that you do. Being a Brit, how do you get interested in American football? I mean, how do you, because I imagine, or at least, you know, from my naive, you know, very sheltered American point of view, that it's not exactly televised a lot over there.
It is more now. I mean, with what they've kind of, you know, they play, you know, some of the games on terrestrial television. There are, you can watch all the games, I think, on, you know, our kind of version of satellite or cable, and you know, obviously there's the whole online thing. At the time when I was kind of started watching, which would have been about 1992 or 3, there was one channel that would replay one game every week that you could kind of stay up late and watch. So the very first game I saw was Bills playing the Oilers, where, you know, this sort of 35-point comeback. So from that, you know, that point, age 10, it was the most exciting thing I'd ever seen, which I think is kind of where I initially, you know, I didn't like soccer, as you call it, as a kid. I wasn't interested in that. And I played, at a young age, like I started to play rugby, but I was quite, like, I suppose I was, you know, identified more with those kinds of players because I was kind of a bigger kid and, you know, poor foot coordination.
I know that feeling.
If you're not kind of into, you know, kicking footballs in this country, there isn't a great deal for you really in terms of sport. You have to kind of look quite hard, you know. Whereas if you're, you know, in the US, if you're if you happen to be 9 foot tall or, you know, 300 pounds, there's a game for you, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot more options stateside for different types of sports.
Yeah.
So, and for some reason, we've taken to putting on Quidditch in the park, which is odd to me. So I guess that's sport for
less,
nerds.
Less chances of concussions as well, Quidditch.
True. While I enjoy the Harry Potter movies, I look at that, and when somebody's doing that in the park, and I'm just like, really? I think you've taken it a little too far.
Really? I mean, look at the amount of Star Wars stuff you can buy. I think it's
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Running around with a broom between your legs doesn't seem that strange when you see what some people dress up in.
Fair enough. I have 6-year-old twin boys who walk around all day in Star Wars costumes, so I've gotten quite used to that. So.
Yeah. Not all that different.
No, not at all. So with Field Theory, you've gotten a chance to do more branding for sports teams and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Kind of talk about your passion behind that sort of project.
I mean, it's really the case that I'm sort of reliant on, I don't really pursue it day to day. So I'm never writing emails to people, you know, chasing jobs in that way, but it's just something that I really enjoy. So I've been really lucky in that, the sort of first stuff that I got to do was working with Nike, who sort of contacted me, you know, completely out of the blue to work on some collegiate brands that they were doing at the time. So the likes of University of Connecticut and the Oregon State, University of Georgia, Purdue, and the likes of those kinds of teams. But I guess more so really was the chance to, I was contacted by Joe Bozak, who you might know, who has attended Creative South a couple of times now. And working with Joe and then kind of subsequently all the people that he sort of has in his, you know, periphery, like the likes of Todd Radom, TJ Harley, Sky Dillon, I've kind of got to work with them on these really interesting projects, the NCAA rebrand and Final Four logo, and a number of kind of mid-sized colleges that you know, it's quite a tight market in terms of the number of teams that are rebranding at any one time is relatively slim. And I think, you know, with the kinds of money that you need to be turning over as an agency working in that field, you know, the competition's kind of tight. So, you know, I feel extremely lucky to be able to be, you know, just sort of on the periphery of that industry, really, and have the chance to kind of dip my toes in when I like.
Yeah, that's a nice luxury to have, is, you know, to do something when you feel like doing it versus when you have to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, you mentioned the Final Four thing, and I think I don't remember if I heard Todd talk about this or if I heard Joe talk about this, but that one was a very collaborative sort of piece where it was a bunch of people working on separate things and then kind of mashing all the ideas together and picking parts and pieces. You know, how does that sort of thing work? And
I think it's I think Joe likes to kind of describe it as a sort of egoless situation where we all kind of chip in and work together on various aspects of it. But at the beginning of it, I mean, I kind of see it the other way around, really. It's like, you know, I respect all those guys' work hugely. And for me, it was just like, oh God, like try not to make sure that your stuff looks shit in comparison to all these sort of great yeah, little things.
Don't shit the bed while you're working on it, yeah. So you aren't the one who gets kicked out of the field.
You'd be best to speak to Joe because he sort of dealt with the whole project. But in terms of kind of the initial concepting for that, like coming up with the system, it was we each really kind of just went away and kind of came back with some proposals for, you know, like how it could look, you know, with the kinds of things that could, you know, the kind of ways it could have to incorporate, you know, these very long
long words, different kind of shaped sporting icons, different, you know, whether it would have to incorporate elements of the various hosting cities, all this kind of potential
sponsorships, things like that.
And the guys that kind of really, Joe and Sky really that kind of came up with the core system as it is now. But it was interesting in terms of kind of, yeah, as you say, like the different collaborative things that went into it. I think, you know, Todd is responsible for sort of some of the type treatment in that. TJ, I think, you know, illustrated some of the environmental elements for the Houston in some of the bits and pieces there. And I think my contribution was sort of the trophy illustration with the kind of like harsh shadows and sort of, you know, kind of pared back aesthetic of of that illustration. And so, yeah, it felt like we all kind of contributed to that system. And I think in the larger system as a whole, myself and Joe worked together solely just on the sports icons. So all the I think it's about 30 or 40 kind of various sports depicted in a sort of system that's reminiscent of an Olympic branding system. We created all of those together.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, cool. And then, you know, I think one of the cool things that I've seen that you've been doing is the Skillshare tutorials that you've done. Was that something that you know, because I know early on it was a lot of people just throwing stuff up on Skillshare on their own. Mm-hmm. Or was this something where Skillshare reached out to you?
Yeah, I hadn't heard of Skillshare before they approached me. They just wrote to me and said, oh, here's this idea. And I guess I wasn't really familiar with the concept of that particular industry at the time. So it didn't initially appeal to me. And then they said they'd pay me quite a bit of money and I changed my mind.
That changes a lot of people's minds.
Well, I was quite surprised that they had that kind of, you know, the kind of cash they were offering just to produce a kind of core sort of, it did take longer than I thought it would do to produce. I was really blown away by the response. And I guess the kind of general interest in animation that sort of seems to exist now, so it's, you know, very noticeable, you know, noticeably more people getting into that kind of thing now than there were, you know, 2 years ago, and, you know, many, many more times more people than there were 5 years ago. So, and it's, you know, it's, I don't, you know, there's very little I do that it doesn't require me to be at my desk actually animating. So to have kind of a nice little passive income stream has been really helpful as well. So, it seems like a really great platform for people to learn. I'm not the kind of person that learns in that way. I have to kind of fiddle about with things on my own. I don't really, you know, follow tutorials like that. So I haven't used it personally, but from the response to the things that I've produced, it seems like it works for some people.
Right. So for me with Skillshare, I think it's one of those cases where I don't know if I'm going to learn a lot from that, but it's an easy enough platform to get into where you can decide if you want to learn about something. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, short snippets. It's you can kind of get in there, look at it, play around with it, and say if it's something that, you know, you thought you were interested in or if you're actually interested mm-hmm. in. So, like, I took your, I have the animation one in my queue, still ready to go. But I did the little sports branding one that you have, and realized very quickly that sports branding is not my niche, and I am that is not my strong point, and I should stick to what I do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny thing. I mean, it's not what I. There's no way you can preempt all the decisions, you know, or convey any of the sort of decision-making process involved in branding. It's just far too vast an area, you know, it's far too reliant on experience. But you can kind of, you know, fiddle around and teach people the
I guess it's sort of
the basic mechanics.
I guess it's more just like the basic mechanics of illustration, I think, and the ways. I mean, the ways I see a lot of even just like, you know, professional team logos with very awkward kind of vertices and strange tangents and things going on, I can at least go, okay, like this is how I think. You know, here's a good way that you should, you know, bear in mind negative space. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, it's something that kind of takes a long time to, sort of start to appreciate as a sort of young illustrator for a lot of people. But it's, you know, something that when you look at people's work like Von Glitschka, you know, like and you know, people like Joe, the negative space in their work is always, you know, perfect. And it's sort of, you know, sort of just sort of teaching people, you know, giving them an idea of like the kinds of things to kind of look out for, or little serendipitous, you know, places where you can use, you know, much more sort of traditional geometry. So, you know, here's a curve that you've got, but look, we could, you know, use a circle here that's going to, you know, really sort of, you know, anchor this part of your illustration. Or, you know, it's going to feel better if your stroke widths are all more consistent, and if you use less tangents and key points, the lines are going to feel smoother. And I think just those kinds of ideas can be useful for, you know, illustrators for, you know, any kind of project that they're dealing with. But it sort of works especially well within the context of that sort of traditional, you know, sports logo vernacular.
Gotcha. So, you know, we've kind of mentioned a few times throughout the podcast Creative South. How do you find out about Creative South being, you know, several thousand miles away across an ocean and all?
I was contacted by Mike years ago, who I don't even think he had a, you know, Creative South or whatever it was called at the time. He had a sort of Columbus Creative thing. I think it was an Adobe group. And they would meet, I think I sort of spoke to them, you know, via Skype to a group of about five or six of them, just in his office. And I kind of, you know, a conversation much like this, like just kind of explaining what I did and, you know, the kinds of things that, you know, I did and some of the illustration work and anything that any questions they wanted answered. And I guess we sort of kept in touch, and he sort of, when he was putting on the first, I think he did two or three before I came, you know, he kind of asked me if I wanted to come and speak, and I was sort of like, oh well, you know, yeah, I'll get around to it at some point, I'll, you know, sort of, you know, not really fully appreciating the force of nature that he is. So
he can be persuasive.
Yeah, he persuaded me, and I came over, and I wanted to, you know, meet up with the guys I've been working with. So we sort of saw it as an opportunity to, you know, Joe, Todd, TJ, Sky, and me sort of saw it as an opportunity to, you know, hook up and see each other and do it at this fun thing. I'd never been to the South, so you know, went there and had a really good time. And you know, just, yeah, I mean, you know how it is. It's very difficult to explain, you know, the sort of the culture that he's managed to create in the design community.
It's a very unique culture, yeah. And I mean that in a very positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's not like anything else I've experienced. I was quite sort of quite shocked, really, to, you know, it's very different to certainly the way we are here, and I suspect the way a lot of designers are in, you know, very kind of traditional sort of heartlands of design, like, you know, your New York and LA and, you know, the East and West Coast, which I imagine to be quite similar to London in that it'd be very competitive, and people are, you know, looking over their shoulders and quite protective of their patch. And the lovely thing about Creative South was that it didn't really feel like that at all. People were extremely kind of encouraging and nice, and just sort of wanted to know about what it was you did. So I've been twice now, and I need to book my tickets this week for this year.
Yeah, definitely. I will buy you a beer for agreeing to talk with me. So post episode bribery. So, you know, moving forward, do you have anything, you know, exciting on the horizon? Any new things that you're kind of working on?
Not necessarily
with, you know, either Field Theory or Cub Studios, but, you know, just kind of other side projects that you're, you know, looking into or playing around with.
I guess there's lots of exciting things that I could tell you about in a non-public place, but with regards to the work stuff, like, we're all it's all a bit on the quiet at the moment, but I think the long term goal that we have is to produce some sort of intellectual property that, you know, ideally kind of something like a kids show or something that we can get, you know, broadcast, and, you know, we have a bit of control over, has a narrative and is just sort of, you know, fun to produce and doesn't require the constant chasing work that the advertising realm requires. So that would kind of be something that we'd look to get into in the future, but that's a little way off. That's sort of a bit more longer term, 5-year kind of plan, I think.
So you're looking to kind of venture into longer form versus a lot of the short stuff that you do now.
I think so, yeah. I guess more, you know, more sort of narrative pieces than just explanatory things that we do. I guess, you know, potentially with an eye towards children's characters and that sort of realm where, you know, you can create quite fun and interesting visual things and, you know, talk about all the kinds of things that you'd like young people to observe in an ethical way or in a sort of, you know, a didactic teaching format.
So not the Kardashians.
Maybe not the Kardashians. Yeah. There's some people who could learn to share, perhaps.
I think that's the nicest way I think anyone has ever phrased that. So, cool. Wrapping up real quick. So you're booking a ticket to Creative South for this year, so people can talk to you there.
They can, yes.
Cool. Where can people find you online?
You can see our animation work at cubstudio.com. You can see, I think, fieldtheory.co.uk is the stuff for my sports branding. You can stalk me on Twitter at frazdav, which is FRAZDAV or FRAZDAV.
I think most of us can figure out the difference between Z and Z.
Yeah, sounds like it. Sounds like it's right.
I've never figured out why there's a difference in English between, you know, the American version, which is Z, and the, I mean, because, you know, what, Canada says Z, Britain says Z, I'm assuming Australia.
I didn't know Canada said Z. That's interesting.
Yeah. But I think it depends on where you're at in Canada.
Yeah.
But I know a bunch of people from Toronto where they say Z.
Yeah.
So,
it's a funny thing. I've no idea.
I don't understand how that evolution came about.
Who else says Z?
I don't
just
know.
Just you guys.
Just us. We're good at doing that.
Yeah.
It's the lazy version of we just shorten everything.
Fair enough. You do what you like if your country's that way, kind of.
Oh yeah, it's quite expensive. Yeah, whereas the UK you can get pretty much anywhere in 4 to 6 hours.
Oh yeah,
drive.
Yeah, six hours you can drive to. I mean, well, you can get a train to another country in about an hour and a half.
Yeah, true. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. So, and then, you know, here it takes 6 hours to get across the state.
Yeah. Well, I think Mike came here over the summer. Actually, I think it might have been his first time out of the U.S. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know how different. I mean, I think, you know, England's probably quite different to the US, but it's not like going to France or, you know, Italy or somewhere like that. That's, you know, they'd be extremely alien to them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I will say, you know, at least there's a common language, yeah. So it's not quite as isolating. Yeah. But yeah, when you, for America, when you go to, you know, a different country and it's a different accent, or even, it can be a little scary. So that's, when it gets into a different language, that's definitely scary.
Yeah, indeed. So
we're good at being American. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate you taking the time. I'm going to stop recording real quick and we'll chat up. Slow down a little and look and feel great doing it with Old South Supply Company. Visit oldsouthsupply.co and use code GETSOUTHERN for 10% off your next order.